We're on Shmuel Aleph. We're starting Perek Bet. We're on page 10 in our packets toward the bottom. Begins with a pasuk, "V'tispalel Chana." Good evening. We're starting the second Perek, "V'tispalel Chana." So Chana davened. We already had the birth of Shmuel. Discussed that a little bit. Now, even after the fact, sometimes when things are not going your way, that's when you turn to Hashem and pray. After you have everything, what do you need to pray for? V'tispalel Chana. After Shmuel is born, still it's an opportunity to daven. It's still an opportunity to pray. Good evening. The Tomer, and she said the following. Now, these next 10 psukim, there's a lot to discuss, and you'll see that because we're not going to do a whole lot of them. And they're connected to her tefillah. Yeah.
What was the problem that she's having problems?
Now we're going to see what was the problem or what is the problem now?
What you're saying is when it says Tispalel, that means why is she praying to Hashem? Because she had problems. Is that what you said?
I said, well, some people have the attitude that when things are down, that's when you pray.
Okay, so
but when things are, now everything's fine.
Yeah.
But still the Tispalel. I'm saying that that's the greatness of Chana.
Oh, okay.
That she didn't just daven when she needed stuff.
When she was in
the right, so that was just a little introduction. So what did she say? Batomer, she said, Olatz libi b'Hashem. Olatz is transcendent. Mitzvah Sion is inyan simcha. So the question is, so just say the word simcha. We'll get to that. So Olatz libi b'Hashem, that I am extremely happy, and my heart is happy toward Hashem. Rama karni b'Hashem. Rama transcends gvoa. I've been exalted and raised. Been my karni is translated as pride. We'll see the other meaning of that. My pride has been lifted up. Rachag pi al oivai, my mouth is widened from among my enemies. And finally, kisamachti b'yeshua secha. So you hear the word simcha again, because I rejoice in your salvation. So that's the basic, the first pasuk that we find over here. And Mesudas David discusses this, which is on pasuk Aleph, of course. When it says, with Tispalel Chana, etzem hatfilah, he was so amrel. The reality is that these 10 psukim, which we're going to see, you can see there's a lot of discussion on these, it's only really the end is her tefillah. Some say that only the last pasuk is some sort of a tefillah of hoping that her child will grow up to greatness. However, the beginning psukim, we don't find her asking for anything. Tchila sidra shivcha yishol mako. Instead, she acknowledges in the praises of Hashem. Lezen nemar v'toymar. So, this is the actual theme of all of our midah, Shmon Esrei. You don't just jump right into asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things. The first three paragraphs, which are always the same three throughout, weekday, Shabbos, Yom Kippur, it's always the same. We're praising Hashem. And that's what a person needs to do. You don't just start asking for things. Who are you? What did you do? Why? Oh, you're saying something nice to me. You're acknowledging the greatness, the things that I've done, okay, maybe then I'll do. And this is, again, looking at the tefillah of Chana, that this is exactly the proper way in which a person should daven. Now, it's interesting, in English over here, it's called Chana's song of prayer. And the question is, the Mefarshim grapple over, is it a song? Is it a tefillah? Is it a song? The Mefarshim say that the etzem of a song, a really good singer, you can hear that it comes from within. It comes from the innermost chambers of their soul, the deepest, most moving songs. And that's the same idea of the tefillah. Tefillah is the same element of that song. It comes within, which is the greatness of Chana and her tefillah. So that's a song and a tefillah really go hand in hand. Now, we mentioned, again, the unusual translation. Well, of Olatz, there's nothing unusual about the translation, which means, as Mr. Sion says, Simcha, that I'm happy. So the question is, why then is it this particular word? Why is this the word that's chosen? So, you don't have it in front of you, but the Mishpat Zohav quotes the words of the Yalkut Shimoni and says that if you look at the word Olatz, you look at the letters, at the gematria, the numerical value, you find something quite fascinating. You have the letter Ayin, which is, help me out over here, I'm not so good at math. 70. The Lamed is another is 30, which equals 100, and that last little letter at the end is another 90, 190. So he said, the Yalkut says, so what's the significance of 190? So he says, Amr l'Avraham nasata ben l'me'a shana l'asar l'tishim shana l'chein olatz libi. So what's the connection of 190? Because the two people, Avraham and Sarah, who could not have a child, that were waiting for a child, eventually they had a child at 100 and 90 respectively. Avraham was 100, Sarah was 90. And therefore, the ultimate level of simcha is when she was remembering, not only does Hashem do for myself, but also she does for others as well. And it's interesting that the 190 also is kuftsadi, kates, which means the end. Like this is the end of the troubles that I had been feeling in my heart. So olatz libi, my heart is changed and it's completed the sorrow that I felt for so many years. Yeah.
Could it be the reason that they're using olatz over here and simcha later on, because if they use simcha twice, someone would be sitting at a table just like this and say, why did they use the word simcha twice?
Right. Because that's true. Because it would be repetitive. It's like, right. What is it? Right. That's probably the one of the correct answers to that question, yes. And since she's davening, as we've seen sometimes in the davening, we don't have to look at every single word, because sometimes to evoke feeling within, you add extra words and you make it poetic, and extra is fine, and therefore that's probably an acceptable answer as well. Now, the Yalkut also brings another idea down, which is worthwhile spending a moment discussing, because we are going to be going back to this concept, the Radak also, that throughout these 10 psukim, we're going to see it connects to different things. We'll see eventually the Radak, which connects to things which will occur in the future. These are actually prophetic words that she says, the Nevuah. The Yalkut says that if we look through these 10 psukim, we see that she connected somehow to the Shemona Esrei. That the things that she says throughout these psukim are directly connected to what we daven for every day. And therefore it makes sense when it says Tespal Chana, that it would make sense that it's the same concept of the 18, which we can see this connection. And I'll just share with you a few things that he says, goes through all of them, I'll just hit upon a few. For example, we'll see a pasuk that says Hashem meimis mechaya. It's going to be one of the 10 psukim. Hashem brings life to those who have passed. Of course, that's the second bracha, mechaya meisim. We're going to see the pasuk, the famous pasuk of In Kadosh Hashem, which corresponds to Akel Kadosh, the third paragraph. She will be saying, which we'll also see today, Kikel Deos Hashem, which is Chonin Hadoas, and it continues on and on. In this line of reasoning, so we see that there's this connection. Vayorim Karen Mashicho is Masmiach Karen Yeshua, and some learn out from here that we see that women are obligated. This is what the Yalkut says: Mikan Onu Lomdim Shenoshim Chayavos Betfila. Women have to daven. You see this? Because Chana daven. Now, not everyone agrees to this. Mogen Avraham says that it's just as long as they women say some bakasha, that's sufficient. Some type of bakasha is enough. And the fact that Chana did everything with Nimrishos Adin. She always did above and beyond anyway. So the fact that she daven does not necessarily mean that everyone else has to daven. But nonetheless, this is how some people interpret it. Okay, let's move on to Pasuk Bet. Alright? Now, let's see Pasuk Bet, and then we're going to go back to the Radak, because we're going to see this unbelievable. We're going to just touch upon the Radak, but we're going to keep going back to it. The Pasuk Bet says on page 12, In Kadosh Hashem, there's no one holy like Hashem. Ki Ein Biltecha, famous words, Ki Ein Biltecha, the Mesudasian, Zulatecha, there's no one other besides you. Vein Sur Ke Elokeinu, and there's no rock like our God. Mesudas Sion says, Asuras Inyan Chozek, Vuhum Lashon Tzervet Tzela, strength and power, something which is permanent, something which doesn't sway or change. Now, we go back to the Radak for a moment. We'll see that all of these psukim, and one of them, which we just saw, that's the reason why I at least want to see Pasuk Bet going out of order, is connected to Nevuah, prophecy. And we're going to see, when we go through this, how every Pasuk, why the Radak feels certain things are connected in the psukim to things which will happen in the future. For example, and I underline just bits and pieces of it, because otherwise it would take the whole night just to do this one Radak. So the Radak said that in Pasuk Aleph, I'm reading from on page 10, that she praises Hashem, thanks God for the child that she was granted. And then the Targum Yonason, which I underlined, said, it means Vitzliyas Chana Baruch Nevuah. This entire tefillah is not just for the here and now, but it's in the future.
See the size of this Targum Yonason on Pasuk Aleph.
Oh, yes.
It's from here to here, the Pasuk Aleph on Targum Yonason. It's a whole thing. It's not a translation. It's a whole... talks about the Nevuah, the Mishnah, the whole thing.
Right, exactly. So, yes, it's very lengthy. So I don't want to get too much into it, but we're just going to touch upon the things that we're going to see again. For example, when he says the next line, which is Pasuk Bet, it's helpful that he puts parentheses where each Pasuk is. In Kodesh Kashem, Omer al Sancheriv. Sancheriv, who was an individual who felt that he had the ability to destroy Yerushalayim unsuccessfully, but he thought he was obviously a pretty powerful person. He probably had a God complex. And therefore, it's appropriate that Pasuk in Kodesh Hashem is Sancheriv, don't think you're so great, because you're not as great as a Kodesh Baruch Hu. As much as you can devise all the plans in the world to destroy and to conquer the world or conquer Yerushalayim, if it's not what Hashem wishes, it's not going to happen. That's what Pasuk Bet means, that prophecy of In Kodesh Hashem. If you jump down, when it's set in Pasuk Gimel, it's going to be, as we'll see in a moment, Al Tarbu, means Al Nebuchadnezzar Malka de Bavel. We're going to see it's connected to Nebuchadnezzar, the one who destroyed first base of Mikdash. Jumping a few more words, when the Pasuk says in Pasuk Dalad, Keshes Giborim Chatim, which will translate then, it's Al-Malchus Antiochus, it's referring to we'll get to that. And then when we get to Pasuk Hey, where it says, Seveim Belechem, that has to do with Al-Benoihi, the Haman, has to do with Haman. Jumping a little bit more, it's going to talk about Din Gogu Magog, the futuristic war in the days of Mashiach. So the Tefillah of Chana is something which was not just her Tefillah, but it was something which was connected to future, all future generations. So, that was the Radak there. Now let's go back and get a look at that whole Radak and spend the whole day on it. But we're going to actually keep going back and referring to why these psukim are connected, because it's not just, they're not randomly written, these particular individuals, they're found in the psukim. Some of them clearer than others. So, if you look at the Radak on page 12 now, the Ein Sur Kelokenu. What does it mean? There is no rock like our God in Chazak Elokeinu. There is no one as powerful. Shehofech Hativoyim Beretzono. He can take and change that which is teva, the nature of a human being. Why? Ki Hayisi Akara. Because my whole life I was an Akara. I couldn't have kids. I was barren. V'lohoyim B'tibi Ledes. It was not within my nature to give birth. So therefore, Ein Sur Kelokeinu, according to the Radak, is that she is reflecting on her own life. And which, again, this is what this tefillah is. The many layers of this tefillah is on a personal level, and is also on a communal level, as well as a future level of all of Klal Yisrael. So this is what she was alluding to in this particular tefillah. Now, Rashi, as we're going to see this short Rashi, then we're going to go into our source sheet, or only one which we'll have, which is one piece of Gemara, but worthwhile seeing. The Ein Sur Kelokeinu, Rashi says, Ein Sayer Kelokeinu, there's no designer, there's no painter like Hashem, Hatzar Tzur B'toch Sur, who's able to put a tzura, an image within another image. And a person can't do that, as we see in the Gemara Brachot, which is on our sheets. And I made it a little bit easier, because it's only one thing, so I put start and end. So, where it says start, Rav Shimi bar Ukba bi'ermel mar Ukba havi shkiach kameh Rav Shimon ben Pazi v'havi mesader gamta kameh Rav Yishuv ben Levi. That was one big name, so that was just one line. Ormelei said, my nechsev, what does the following pasuk mean? Baruch inashi es Hashem v'chol korovai yeshem kodsho. All of my korovai, everything inside of me is able to declare the greatness of Hashem's holiness. So Ormelei said, Boro, come and see. Shlo kimidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas bas v'dam. We look at what we can accomplish in this world, it falls very short of the mark of Hashem's greatness. Why? Because midas bas v'dam, sartzur al gavi akos. You can have a nice person who can paint some beautiful things on the wall, do some graffiti, some spray painting. The einu yochel lahatil ba, but they cannot put into that picture Ruach, Neshama, Karavayim, Bnei Moyim. They can't put in any of these lovely things, intestines, whatever. But Kodesh Baruch Hu, okay, Hashem's not like that. Sartsura B'toch Tzura. Hashem is able to, the master of all painters, is able to create an image within an image. Matul Ba Ruach, Neshama, Karavayim, Bnei Moyim. He's able to put everything inside the human being. Behainu, the Amr Chana, and this is what the Amr Chana, what Chana was saying in her tefillah, which we just read this pasuk. In Kodesh Kashem, Kein Biltecha, Vein Sur Kelokeinu. What does it mean? There's no rock like God? So according to the Gemara, my Ein Sur Kelokeinu, Ein Sar Kelokeinu. That it could mean a rock, but it could also mean that there's no one who can, no creator, no one who is a painter as great as God. And finally, the Gemara then picks up on this other part of the pasuk, Ma'in Ki'en Biltecha, that there is no one other besides you. So, Om Rabbi Huda, Barmatsia Al Tikri Ki'en Biltecha, don't read, you can read it that way, or you can change the wording around a little bit, El Ein Livo Secha. There is nothing that can be worn, nothing that wears out, nothing that can wear you out. Shalom midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas Masav Adam, when it comes to people, Masi Yadav Mavun Osa. When you create a building and it's a strong structure, it outlasts you. In other words, the thing that you created outlasts the person, the creator. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mavun Masav. However, Hashem outlasts that which He creates. So when we have the ability to create something, and that thing, if it's done properly, can outlast us. But nothing can outlast Hashem. Hashem can never be worn off. And that's how the Gemara interprets this particular verse. But it's fascinating how the Gemara, and which is really what Rashi says in our text, is that Hashem is comparable to a painter, to someone who creates, a creator, which is obviously a positive aspect that Hashem is not someone who's destructive. So anyone who is destructive is counter that which God stands for. God stands for something which is building and constructing and beautifying. And I mentioned before, a couple years ago, the idea of how one is able to envision and know with certainty that there's God created the world. How do we know that God created the world? So the mashal of a person who has a piece of canvas, and on that piece of canvas, it was stuck in a room. And what was the significance of this canvas? Because the person was at the Louvre, and he saw this beautiful painting, the Mona Lisa, and he was standing next to the guy, and he said, "You know who made this picture?" "Person, what do you mean?" "Of course we know who made this picture. It was Leonardo da Vinci." He said, "No, it wasn't. I will tell you what happened. That painting that was in this room, no windows, there's a bunch of paint cans. They took a little kitten, a cat, they threw it in there, and the lids were off. There was no windows. They shut the door. No one was in there. They locked it. And they opened the door 2 hours later, and you believe this beautiful painting. How did that happen? Because the cat jumped all over the parchment, and it was able to create this beautiful painting." So you say, "What are you talking about? It's impossible." So he said, if you don't believe it's possible that, a cat can create this simple little painting, then certainly if you look around and see the greatness around us, in which it's not just a painting, but as Rashi says, it's a surah b'toch surah. It should be even more of an ability for us to be able to recognize God's creation. It's God's the one who created the world.
Rashi didn't believe in the Big Bang.
Apparently not. Apparently not. Okay. Pasuk Gimel. Let's move on. Al Tarbu Tidabru. Thank you. Al Tarbu Tidabru Givoya Givoa. So, Pasuk Gimel, do not increase speaking Givoa. Givoa is a Balgaiva. Here it's translated as arrogance upon arrogance. Yetze Osok Mipi Chem. That it should come out, Osok, which is translated in the Pesud HaSion as Dibri Chazak, strong words, or again, haughtiness coming out, Mipichem, from your mouth. Kikel Deos Hashem, Velo, which is in the parentheses, the brackets, Nischanu Alilos. So, Kikel Deos Hashem, Hashem is the God of thoughts, and below, and to him, not that below with an aleph, below, and to him, niskanu alilos, Mesud HaSion translates both of those words, minyan and masav. Hashem is able to count all of our actions. Hashem knows exactly what's happening with all of our thoughts. He understands to the T what's going on. Now, if we look in Rashi, we'll discuss maybe in a few moments the significance of why the Kri is in the Ksiv, the written, is different than the way it's read. But before we do so, let's look in Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel and Rashi says like this. Pasuk Gimel, Al-Tarbu Tidabru. What does this mean? Kol Gasya Ruach Asher She'atem Mitzlachas, all those people who are haughty, and which they are under the impression that they are successful. Rashi says that who is she referring to? Who is Chana davening and talking about? This person, this haughty one, this Balgaiva, is referring to Penina. Penina, who had all these kids and everything was going great for her. Oh, that's the person that this pasuk is referring to. That's what Chana is talking about. This haughty woman by the name of Penina.
Okay.
Doesn't sound very proper.
So why would they attribute that to Lafib?
She did it. Lafib Shuto, I mean, the simple explanation is that this is what's an outpouring of what's coming out of her heart, and she can't control those emotions of the pain that she caused them. The pain that she was... It's hard to...
According to Chaim Yonason, it's a rule altogether, so it's not just something that's coming out of her heart.
Right.
You could actually say that this might be one of the reasons. This is,
you
say it's Shirat Chana, but it says there's a Tfila, but the Daber Tfila. It doesn't. It's very parallel to when you have Shirat David, when you get victorious over Shaul. It says we have Daber David at Dibrei Shirah Hazon. It doesn't say that he sings it because this was a victory for him, but it was a victory at the expense of somebody who was not really all bad. So, and was a fellow Jew and not all bad. It wasn't a victory over Kael Paro. This was a victory over a pretty decent guy who made some mistakes. So that instead of singing the song, he's speaking the song. And here, she's giving her praise and her song of praise, but it's a tefillah rather than, and it's for the bear. It's not Yashir.
So,
the pasuk is talking about arrogance.
Arrogance, yeah.
Okay, and then a balgaiva, it's all wrong. And her tefillah is arrogant. It's hypocritical.
She is thanking God for giving her the revenge that she.
But that's stop right there. That's a greatness of a person, but the greatness of a person stops right there. And once you say that for the revenge,
yes, it is.
Well, the greatness is lost.
The reason I would disagree with that is that what she's doing here, everything she's saying here, is all praise and shevach to Hashem. It's none of this.
She's thanking God for doing this. For taking up her cause
against another.
Someone.
I think Rashi
who was.
I think another name. What Rashi says looks pretty posh. It's Bishvil Panino Shahoisa Mitzgoa Aleho. So she's referring to the fact that Panina did this to her. She's not saying now anything bad about Panina, but she's praising God that this happened now because of what happened at the time that Panina was, and we know that Panina was, lording it over her. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but a great person.
Would let it go?
That's correct. You're thanking, the tefillah is, thank you Hashem for giving me this child, and then go on to continue thanking God for all the great things. God knows what Panina did. There's no reason for her ahead to bring this in.
Unless Panina was doing it for the reasons that we said that she was doing it at the time, remember? That she was trying to bring about the tefillah b'chama.
Which could go to the next part. It says, Ki kel deos Hashem. Because Hashem really knows.
Right.
So maybe she was.
Maybe she's actually saying good things about Panina with this.
Because I'm not really sure what her intentions were. Only God knows.
Did this on purpose.
That's what we learned.
There's a Rashi which says it was L'Shem Shemayim. It was a Gemara.
To get her to be misfollowed.
She thought she was doing L'Shem Shemayim. She shouldn't have been doing it that way. But that's granted.
This isn't the first time that one of the great women acted like this, of the false sorrow of Hagar, was a very similar situation. She was very upset the way Hagar was treating her. Hagar was lording it over Sarah also.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked Avram to get rid of her. And that was a fake on her part.
I think you have to look at the names of the two women and it sort of helps you out. If you look at Pnina, it's almost like Pnima. It's almost like it's all inside. The Pnina, after all we know, is comes hidden in an oyster. And her greatness and everything was really hidden, and she put on an exterior that didn't seem so nice for the sake of making Chana be with Balelet and all of that.
Meantime, every time Chana had a child, one of Panina's died.
Right.
So how great could she have been?
On the surface, it never showed up.
Look at the rest of the Rashi.
What's the rest of the Rashi? Lefi. Where are we? We're gonna get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you didn't like the Pashup shots, that's the reason why you have the Targum. The Targum says that this has nothing to do with Panina, so don't think that she would ever speak this way about anyone. But rather, as we read in the Radak, which is really the Targum, Al Tadabru is Omer Al Nebuchadnezzar Malk de Bavel. It's referring to Nebuchadnezzar. So again, you're talking about a person who obviously felt that he was a very powerful individual, ruled basically the entire world at that time. So therefore, on this, she was alluding to this individual, that such a person as a Baal Gaiva shouldn't, such a haughty individual. Al Tadabru, Al Tarbu Tadabru, Gavoa is referring to had nothing to do with Tanina, talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Now, that's another interpretation. Now, we continue in Rashi, which is the second part of this pasuk, of Ki Kel Deos Hashem, Yodim Mashem Shulavavachem. Hashem knows what's in everyone's hearts. And then the pasuk concludes, Velo Niskenu Alilos. Rashi continues, Komasya Adam, Nimonim Lefanav. All of our actions are counted before him. And as the Masuda Sion said, Rashi continues, says that's Lashon Minyan, it's the language of counting, which gets into the whole question of Bechira and Yediyah. How is it possible that on one hand Hashem knows everything, yet we have free will? That's what the Pasuk is saying. Hashem knows everything. Hashem knows our actions, which could mean, you could just translate it as Hashem knows what we did, not what we're going to do. That's one answer. However, if you want to read that Hashem knows everything, which means Hashem knows the future too. The question is, how is it shayach possible to have Yediyah and Bechira? And there are many answers to this question. One I like is the Ragachavar. The Ragachavar says that we know one of the fundamental differences between man and God is that we are limited to two things: time and space. Hashem is beyond space. He doesn't take up, occupy space. And also, He's l'mal min hazman. There's no such thing as time. So therefore, the whole problem of Yediyah and Bechira to us is, how does God know what I'm going to do tomorrow? But the reality is, there is no tomorrow. Hashem is completely beyond the concept of time, which that itself doesn't make sense to us. It's not supposed to make sense to us because we're limited to it.
That's why we have to use those terms. We never understand.
Right. But therefore, that's the reason why Yediyah and Bechira is not an issue. To us, it doesn't make sense. But we should understand that God is beyond time, and therefore, the fact that God knows what we're going to do tomorrow is not necessarily an indication that it takes away from our free will. We just don't understand, how is it possible that something is beyond space and time. And therefore, maybe, and I think this is brought down over here somewhere, that's the reason why the Kriya and the Ksiv are written differently. Because if you actually read it the way it's written, below with a lamed is that Hashem does not, with an aleph, Hashem does not know our deeds. Hashem is not aware. But below we read it with a vav, that no, to Him, that Hashem really does. Because the way that Hashem creates this world is that He gives us the opportunity to be able to feel as though that He does not know what our future is. He allows us to make our decisions on our own, even though the low with a vav, He really does know exactly what we're going to do. That's something to possibly think about as a possible approach to this answer. Okay, let's move on to Pasuk Dalet. Keshes Giborim Chatim. Chatim is translated here in the Mesudas Sion as Inyan Shvira, broken. So the bow of the mighty is broken. And then the next part of this pasuk, it's all translated for us in Mesudas Sion, fortunately for us. The Nechshalim is an Inyan of Ripoy Koach, those who have fallen, or those who are weak in strength. Azru Chayu, those people, says the Mesudas Sion, are Chagru Koach, will be girded with strength. So basically we see, and the next pasuk is going to really also show this, that Hashem really favors the underdog. The person who is strong, Hashem is going to break their bows. They're not going to be successful. Those people are nechshalim, those who have fallen, azru chayil, Hashem will elevate and give them strength. So if you are rooting for the Patriots this Saturday night, you know which team God actually roots for. He always roots for the underdog. But that's what is being said over here. That Hashem looked at me and the issues that I had and was able to, even though maybe I was not as, you know, I was deserving of it, but you can see I was downtrodden. I looked like I was nothing compared to Penina. Penina had everything and I have nothing, yet the tables turned. And therefore, appropriately in the Targum, what does the Targum say this is alluding to? Keshes Giborim Chatim. This is going back to the Radaf that we read. This, I think, fits the best, at least in my understanding, of Keshes Giborim Chatim Omer al Malchus Antiochus. Right? Antiochus was in what that was the Chanukah story, right? And we, of course, know in Al Hanisim, what do we say? Rabim b'ad matim, t'meim b'ad chaloshim b'ad Giborim b'ad chaloshim. So we find this idea, the same concept, that even though you have someone who has everything, is strong, is powerful, that's maybe like Penina, if you want to compare it, and Chana was comparable to the Jewish people in the times of the Yevanim, and therefore Hashem was able to find favor to them, to those people, as well as to me as on an individual level. Okay, so that's one interpretation, that we find how Hashem changes in people's favor to help everyone out. And this also is the based on the famous Gemara in Baba Basra, which we've said maybe more than once, about a child by the name of Yosef that died, that was sick. He became comatose. He was passed out, and his father Rabbi Yeshua didn't know what to do. He was mispalel. He came back to life. So immediately, Rabbi Yeshua asked them the question, "Say, how you doing? I'm so happy that you're alive." He said, "What did you see in the world to come?" He said, "Strange. The people, they'll yonim b'tachtonim, tachtonim they'll yonim. The people who are in the top in this world are in the bottom in that world. All the people who are Bali Gaiva, the powerful people, the arrogant people who acted so much above, they're below. So I saw an Olam Hapuch. I saw an inverted world. Everything was upside down." And on this, his father said, "No, you got it all wrong, my son. Olam Baruch, you saw the clear world. This is the Olam Hapuch. This world is upside down." And that's the idea over here as well, that Chana is saying that even though there are people that have their bows, their keshes, when it comes to Hashem's world, keshes giborim chatim, those bows will be smashed, they'll be shattered, they'll be broken. However, when it comes to the people who appear in this world as nechshalim, those who are the downtrodden, those people who are roughly hakoach, who are weak in spirit and strength, ozru chayim, those are the people that really have the strength. Those are really the powerful ones in this world. Pasuk Hey. Alright. Pasuk Hey, yeah. Seveyim balechem niskaru. So those who are satiated with bread, apparently they have everything you can ever dream, niskaru, they will become so poor that they'll need to be hired out in order to be able to eat bread. Or the sign says, we'll work for food. Ur'avim chadelu. And those people who are starving, chadelu, I underline here, manu misusion, is they will cease to be starving. They will, again, the same idea. Things will change for them. And again, on a personal level, it's Chana talking about herself.
You know, they will stop being starving.
Yeah, only those who were.
The people who weren't starving before, they're going to be starving.
Right.
No, they're not going to be starving.
They'll be rent.
They'll work for
bread. They'll work.
Yeah,
right.
But they may not work hard enough to get the bread that they need.
Well, they're going to work. They can work for bread. At least they'll get to work overtime again.
I guess that's what it would entail to get a nice loaf of bread. Adakara Yalda. And until a woman who was barren, which sounds clear, Yalda Shiva, was able to give birth to 7 children, which is referring to herself, which is kind of strange. We're only talking about Shmuel over here, not Shiva. It's 7. There's going to be a few answers to that. Some of them are really enjoyable. But Rabbah's Bonim Umlola. And the woman who had many, many children, Umlola, the citizen is increases. They're going to be cut off. Bereft, which basically means they're going to lose those children, which is what we're going to understand. If it is referring to Penina, that's what it's alluding to, this idea. And if we go back to this original Radak, what is this Pasuk referring to? Those who are Seveyim Balechem. So on this, the Radak says, this is referring to the Nebuah, Al Binohi Dehaman. Days of poor, Haman. So it makes sense. Haman, was he a poor guy? He had everything. He was Seveyim Balechem. He had everything. But ultimately, he lost everything. Sometimes because you feel you need, you're Seveyim Balechem, but you still don't feel that it's enough. Because he said, I need more. So because of this niskaru, he ended up meeting his fate. Okay. We're looking at Masudas David now. Masudas David says on Pasuk Hey, what does it mean that she had Shiva, 7 children? Not true, she only had 1. So, before we get to that, Shiva, here it's at Seveyim, I apologize. Seveyim. Anoshim Shahayu Seveyim Nasru Eid. So he said those who were satiated, see, it's a little bit different than the way the Pasuk says, they'll become hungry. Ad, until it's necessary, that they'll need to actually rent themselves for work in order to be satiated. So it does completely turn around. They became starving, to the point that they had no choice but to work. And on the other hand, there were avim, those who were starving, v'asher hayu maskirim atzmum ba'avor harabim, those people who had to work for food because they were starving, chadlu v'haskir atzmum, they will no longer have to do so, kimatzu dai mechasronim, because they were able to have enough to fulfill that which they were lacking. Then the Mitzudas David says, ad akara yol deshiva. A woman who was barren, couldn't have any kids, now all of a sudden she has seven. Ratzal omar, kol kach rabba hashkachato, how great is the hashkacha pratit in this world, ad asher misha hoysa akara yol deshiva bonim. A woman who couldn't have kids, now has seven. Misha hoysa bas ribas bonim nirchosa be'avdin kol baneha. A woman who had many children, unfortunately, kol baneha, all of her children will die, which we're going to see is not what happened by Penina, which could very well mean it's not referring to Penina, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's look at going out of order. We have a large redact, which is very worth a while seeing. Let's see Rashi first, because this Rashi is pretty shorter, but very interesting. Rashi says, Ad akriyol de shiva rapta bonim. So Rashi says, V'od shakar yoleda shiva banim. So a woman who couldn't have kids, now seven. Rapta banim lola v'kaveris manah. She'll have to bury her children. Chana, what is this referring to? So talking on a personal level. Chana yoleda shiva. Chana gave birth to seven children. Shenemar ki pokad Hashem es chana v'tahar v'tel shlosha banim u'shtei banos. Which doesn't really equal seven, but we'll understand that in a moment. Three sons, two daughters. There's going to be a couple answers. We'll get to the bottom of the Rashi. We'll have a few answers as well. This is that which we spoke about before. That when Chana gives birth to one child, Penina koveris shnayim. Penina would have to bury shnayim, two. Well, she had two, right? Ten. V'asar banim hayula. She initially had ten. So every time Chana had one, she lost two. So therefore, after child number one, Penina only had eight. Shnemar halo nochi tovu chom yasar banim. So we know, because that's what Elkanah said to Chana when she was kind of depressed, or very depressed, that I love you more than 10 children. So that was referring to Shel Penina. Shel Penina, right. Because Shel the Chana arba, so after Chana gave birth to four, which means after every child born, two were lost. So after four, right, Kavar Penina Shmona, she already had buried eight children, so she only had two left. Avra Bialda Falad Chamishi, and when it turned about that Chana was pregnant and she was about to have child number five, and everyone in the household was so ecstatic and so happy, except for Penina, knowing obviously what's going to happen. She's going to lose her last two children. So Nishtancha Penina L'Ragleha, so Penina fell upon her, fell down. V'ikshirachmim, and asked for mercy. And because of this, those two children were spared. V'nikru al shma, because Chana was mispalel together with Penina, so that those two children will live.
It's like she had seven.
It's as though she had seven. So really, she only had five kids. But the other two children of Penina, this. That's answer number one of why do we get to seven.
Does anybody have a problem with this? No.
Well, with Penina's children,
there's a lot of problems with this, which we'll get to. Go ahead.
What I see here is a mirror. Chana is a mirror of what she doesn't like. She's doing everything wrong.
She's not praying for Penina.
Oh, don't be afraid, guys. Come on.
Lord.
She knows you have a point here where Penina is actually coming to beg to Chana, save my kids.
Yes.
So that means
you don't have a problem
with that. Chana has been responsible.
Chana was apparently Penina felt that if Chana was barren and she was able to pray to God, that means God listens to her prayers. Now, she's losing all her children. She went to Chana and said, do me a favor. pray for me too.
Doesn't he doesn't have a problem with praying for me. His problem with the eight kids who died first.
I mean, why do guys go to Rebbe's? Because the Rebbe's praying, things happen. So you go, listen, there's a Rebbe, he prays for me.
I just want to say, nobody has problems.
No, everybody would run. Come on.
We don't think that Hannah was praying for her.
No, she wasn't praying, but she wanted Hannah to pray, but she should retain her children. So she prayed for her.
So why didn't Penina come to her right away and say, hey,
why should Penina have to come to a human being? Come on.
Why not?
So let me give a couple possibilities of how this is addressed in the among the Mefarshim. And we're in the middle of the Rashi, there's a huge Radaf which we're not gonna get to today. But nonetheless,
that doesn't mean that it happened that way.
So what exactly?
It makes no difference if it happened or it didn't happen that way. But everybody at this table, some of the people at this table, don't see a problem with it. I have a problem with that.
Well,
there's a couple
of questions. The first question that the Mefarshim ask is if in fact she did something wrong by hurting Chana as she did, then why was it that she was punished specifically at the time in which she had children? Why every time that she had a child did she lose two children? Right. Why wouldn't she, maybe she should have lost one, and why was it at that precise moment?
And why? And what was the problem with, and the children who died, we have to think of them too, what did right. they do that's wrong?
That I don't have an answer for. But this is what some of the Mefarshim say. And they didn't bring this idea. But when it comes to a person who steals, you steal $100. There's a concept of kefel. You have to pay back not just $100, you have to pay back $200. Why? So the Rambam says as follows, that when you stole $100 from me, now I am lacking $100. I had $100, now I'm lacking it. So therefore, for you to feel what it's like to lose $100, it's not enough for you just to give the $100. You have to give it another $100 so you know what it felt like to be in my situation. I didn't see anyone say this. I'm wondering if that's the reason why she lost two children every time she had one. Yeah, for the same.
It can't be, because it's not like she got something for it.
Right.
It's not like she got something from Chana. So when she loses the one child against the one child, she's feeling it.
Then you have another problem.
I'm sorry, but
somebody asked you to go ahead to save your life.
Didn't think it through so well.
Somebody goes over you to save your life and says, go kill this other person, I'll spare your life. I mean, what did these innocent children do that they should die for a situation like this? That's
correct.
That's already on a cheshbon that's been asked over. What did children do at the time of the Churban that they should have died? Yeah, that mothers should eat their children.
Specifically, the punishment for this woman was that I can see punishment enough. She can't have any more kids, and Hannah's now going to have 12 kids. Okay, but to go ahead and to punish the children. And say that's punishing the mother, you're doing more than just punishing the mother.
So, Joel, my question to you is, who are you angry at?
I'm angry at people in this room that have a concept that this is a good thing. That they can
this
get,
is the way.
Well, first of all,
I didn't say it's a good thing.
This is the way
some of the Mefarshim are explaining it.
But no,
we have a problem with Mefarshim. I have a problem with a lot of Mefarshim saying it.
But you don't know what a Cheshbon and Shemayim is. It's not a matter of that.
That's a different issue. But that for us to go ahead and to say, I can understand where Penina is going to lose her children, and I can understand where Chana is coming from. I cannot understand myself where Chana is coming from. And to consider this a great person. There has to be another issue here that we don't see.
I think that what you have to look at this is that Chana is pointing out the power of Kadosh Baruch Hu, that Kadosh Baruch Hu can reverse things that would look good, shall be bad, but bad
turns good. We're accepting the fact that these Mefarshim are saying that these children die two for one is because of what Penina did earlier on. And Penina from the first parak goes ahead and shows that she's angry, and that's what the words say, she's angry with, Chana's angry with Penina.
Because Penina was rubbing
She's one of the seven women.
But to go ahead and pray now.
Marry Penina and marry Elkanah's favorite wife was Hannah. And she was trying to usurp
I mean, these are all the whole recap that's going on in the Gula. This whole field is
on
the Gula.
To this prayer.
Let me interject for a moment over here, which may not make matters much better, but nonetheless, we have a couple minutes left. I want to be able to share a couple ideas about this. So, first, it's possible, as the Mefarshim say, that this punishment, assuming that the punishment was on her, is that it was Mida Keneged Mida, in order for her to be able to understand the suffering that she caused and the pain of not having a child. Now, the question is, why was it only after four children, that she figured this out? Let me just finish. Why was it only after four children? After four children, she finally understood that there was a pattern. Okay, maybe it lost two children. After losing four children to two, why did she wait until after she lost already eight children? Wouldn't she have woken up and figured that out? So the Mefarshim give us a little bit of words of Musar and say that when it comes to a person that thinks they're correct, especially those L'shem Shemayim, I'm right. And even though you see all the signs pointing in your direction saying, wake up, you've done something wrong, and Hashem is begging, it wouldn't have been enough for Chana to be mispal. It was necessary for her to acknowledge that she made a mistake. And it was only until after she lost all those children, she finally woke up because of the koach, as he says, of a person's ability to rationalize, to think, I'm right, and therefore it's only now.
I can accept some part
right,
of that.
Right.
Right now, we're up to Bo. We're learning that Paro finally understood how nine times Hashem comes to Paro and does terrible, terrible things. The tenth time he comes, he kills only one child, the oldest. He didn't take eight children from Paro. By taking that one child, Paro understood. He finally understood. I can understand giving this woman a skin lesions and having her go to bed with bed bugs at night, being frightened by a lion outside. And these are signs that she doesn't connect everything. And finally, a child is taken from her.
Right.
But here you've taken eight kids.
Right.
And, going back to the story of people, of Jews leaving Eretz Yisrael, when Boaz Yashir was some, Hashem was very upset. He said to the people, don't be happy that all these people are dying.
Right.
And here we're not saying anything to Chana. Chana's saying these things, praying for these things.
But Chana didn't do it.
Chana
didn't do it. She was having children.
Chana, I'm reading a tefillah over here where she's saying all these haughty people, the arrogancy, all these things that she's saying, she's doing.
But it also shows the, if we want to learn on this level, it shows the human side of who she is.
Then I'll accept
and a person
that. No,
who's,
I will accept
it's
that.
Coming
if
straight,
me,
it's just...
No, if you're telling me that, I can accept it. If you're telling me that this is a person who's having vengeance, I can accept that. She was very upset with Penina, and as most human beings are, she was seeking vengeance, and she got the vengeance. But now I'm hearing everybody say that this is a wonderful tefillah.
Well, this is not, she's not being mispalel that she should lose children. This apparently already happened because this is what I saw happen.
You go ahead and pray to Hashem and thank Hashem for somebody else's suffering.
Well, I don't know if she's thanking
you. Not thanking. She's not pointing out that things can be.
She says this is the way.
Okay.
And she and
you're playing with yourselves. You're playing with yourselves.
Came at the right time.
It's also possible the fact that she says that the fact that I have seven children, she could be thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he spared these two children. Thank you for allowing to show some level of compassion.
I'm concerned with, I agree with Joel.
Right.
It is a tefillah, but it's a human tefillah.
Right.
And she has shortcomings. Ramses. She has shortcomings. She's a woman, and she is going to be catty. The fact that she got revenge on this woman who was abusing her.
Correct.
I don't think that's what you see in the pasuk.
I
don't see that in the pasuk.
Let's go back to the first parak where she says that she has an enemy. Who is her enemy? Her enemy is Penina. Now she finally has a kid. She's praying to Hashem, and she's saying certain things.
She has seven children, or five.
She has one
this
child.
No!
Listen to me. Listen.
No, Rashi says
the older
Rashi says five or seven.
It would make no difference if she had only one child at this point, and she's praying to Hashem and thanking Hashem. Mm. And then she goes ahead and says, and I can understand what she says, that the mighty should be humbled. And obviously the mighty over here is who? Is Penina. I can understand that. All of this I understand. I don't understand how this can be something that I can point to my children to be proud of.
But
it's simple. I can go ahead and point this to my children to say, this is a human being, and she was very upset, and she was hurt, and she now is standing on top of the heap because she's the winner.
So now she's saying, now look at the rest of the prayer.
Yeah.
You're not finished with the prayer yet.
Or you can show,
you're in the middle of this prayer, you're taking her words out of context.
Or you can show your children.
The next pasuk says, Hashem made me some kind.
Right.
But this is a human being. When somebody prays to Hashem, Hashem listens to everything you say.
He might not answer
your prayer.
She thanked Hashem for giving her all these children. And an abundance of children.
And
she's saying it in spite of the fact that Penina lost her children.
No. That's called the white one.
But there's no place that it says that she prayed to Hashem or something.
Is the person who's the Bhagaiva over here, is that supposed to be Penina?
According to some, yes.
Okay. And those some people, whoever they are, feel that this is a good thing. They're not coming
they
down.
They do not. She's stating a fact about the way Hashem conducts himself. That's what she's saying over here.
Is this supposed to
She's saying that Hashem goes ahead and takes somebody who's a Baal Gaiva and brings that person down to the level that will make that person...
And that person happens to be Penina, who's now going to lose... eight of her children.
But when do you see that she's praying for that? When do you see that she's even happy about it?
She already lost eight of her children.
Right.
She's reflecting on what happened.
Based on the
pasuk says that she has seven, which means it already happened.
I can understand what she
brought. If the whole thing was praising Hashem, okay, then you praise Hashem, but why bring in, and he brought down the Morty and killed her children?
We're running late.
Then was powerless to do anything about it anymore. Why should there have been?
With Paro, when he went ahead and he took one child, he took it after nine times of warning him.
But he can carry it even further. You make a good point of it, because the Shira, not only the Paro himself, but the Shira, the whole thing, is its exaltation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what he did, and there is a lot of death over there. It's a statement of fact.
But Hashem is saying that I don't want anybody to be happy over this because
Bnei Yisrael was allowed to sing Shira. It was the Malachim that Hashem told not to be happy about it. Bnei Yisrael were able to sing Shira.
And that's why actually some people say Oz Yoshir in the future, not to do it right at that point, Later on, after all the thing is done, you can look at it in a historical way, but don't rejoice right now when they are dying. So this is what
we don't celebrate Hitler's yard side either. Yeah.
That's my wife's birthday.
All right, look at the other list.
Good idea. Let's wrap this up by looking at the Rashi. We'll have to, in the next time we meet, see the Radak, but let's finish up these last two Rashis on the bottom, the very bottom, which discusses again, if in fact, as what the Pasuk says, that she had five children, not five boys, she had Shlosha Banim, Shtei Banos, three sons and two daughters. So how could the Pasuk say, Yalda Shiva? Again, that's assuming that this whole Pasuk is talking about, on a personal level, it could be referring to a Nebuah, a prophecy. But Rashi says, another interpretation. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, toward the very bottom of page 12, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'nei Banim Harihem Kibanim. We know that Shmuel ultimately will have two sons, and therefore, person who has grandchildren, it's comparable to your own children. V'yesh Omerim, and some say Shiva. What's the significance of Shiva? So we come out to your communion Shmuel. Shiva, the shin, and in Shmuel, starts with a shin. So the only difference is the...
77.
You have a bet, an ayin, and a hey, which is 77. Right, it's 377. And the mem is 40, the lamed is 30, which is 70. The vav and the aleph in Shmuel is 7. So therefore, I have given birth to Shiva, could refer to Shmuel. Which Shmuel, Shiva, what is obviously a connection between what is the significance of number 7, teva, nature, which means, as we saw before, which is how we'll conclude, in the Radak on the top, is that it was the Teva that I was not supposed to have a child.